Patty, I first want to thank you for joining us here on 97.7 The Bull.
Thanks.
Wow, what an experience that must have been, heading over to China back in 1981, right after the fall of communism.
It was not something that I initiated. I had married just a year before, and my husband, he was from Italy. He had lived all over the world, and he had a real interest in China, and he majored in Chinese. He was fluent and had lived for a year in Taiwan learning Chinese before we married. And this was a dream of his, and I didn't have the world experience that he did, but I was always an adventuresome type and sort of ready for anything. And so although this was his dream, I went with it. I'm like, sure, let's go. And I did know enough about China to know that it had been isolated since the revolution in 1949 and that they had not had contact with the Western world. They were more associated with the Soviet Union at the time. And but that since Mao had died and there had been a change in leadership, but there's also a big change in public policy and economic ideas and some cultural changes. So I knew I was going at a really interesting time in history. And so I was all over that. And when I got there, I just decided to take notes and pictures because I knew it was sort of a way of life that was disappearing.
Was your husband kind of that reasoning then to head over there? And because you grew up in Minnesota, and I'm sure just the culture shock in itself heading over there.
This was something he had been interested in China for years. And I didn't have specific interest in China, but growing up, my mother's aunt had been a missionary in India. She was a nurse, and she had lived her whole career there. And she would visit us on her furloughs. So I did have an appreciation and sort of knowledge that there was a wider world out there. And my great aunt would come and visit us and talk about sort of the poverty and the conditions that she worked in India. But she would also bring us, you know, like beautiful little pieces of silk from a sari or a tiny little piece of silver work. So I was aware of this sort of wider world and interested in Asia. I was very happy to join my husband on this adventure. I had a lot of curiosity myself. And my background was in geography also. So I was always interested in the wider world.
Your book, The Second Long March, Memoir from a Witness to China's Transformation, just kind of give us at least a little bit of a synopsis of the book and what it will entail with your journey to China.
So I first went there in 1981. And as I said, realizing that I was sort of seeing this important, this way of life that was disappearing, I really got to see the last days of communism as an economic and social system. People think of it as a type of government. It's really more an economic system where everything is done collectively. There's little or no private enterprise. People worked in collective, like everybody worked for the state in a collectivized workplace. It was also a very formist society. People didn't want to stand out, so everybody wore, you know, if you think about that old stereotype of the Chinese in the blue Mao jackets, they weren't all blue, but people dressed very uniformly in dark blue, gray, olive drab, and it was poor. There was food rationing, and manufactured goods were hard to get. People would wait for months or years to get a bicycle or a sewing machine. And it's also ironic that as the kind of people who would go there, Americans like us, tended to be sort of free-spirited, adventuresome types, and then we went to this very regimented, almost militaristic society, so it was sort of an odd fit. So I try to paint a detailed picture of what life was like in China back then with the food rationing and the government dictating what crops people could grow. And there were loudspeakers in the neighborhood to wake people up to get going for work. And ultimately, then there was also a lot of surveillance of us. Everybody knew who we were and what we were doing. And we were discouraged from having social relationships with our students who became friends because there was just a lot of suspicion of foreigners. We could have stayed for 2 years and we chose not to because it was just so hard to socialize. And we just craved having normal social interactions. So we returned home, and then we kind of got on with our lives and careers, and we had two children and worked, but always kind of kept abreast of what was going on in China. And when my kids got a little bit older, a little more independent, I joined a writing group, and I started thinking, yeah, I should take all these notes that I wrote when I was living there and turn it into a book. And pretty soon realized, well, this is something that had happened, you know, like 15 years earlier. I needed to go back. So through one of my former students, I was able to arrange to return to China in 2005 to that same university for 2 months. and my husband held down the fort at home, and I went back to see the city that I had lived in. It had been almost rural in character. I mean, there were donkey carts. When I was there in 81, there were donkey carts on the main road downtown. And when I went back, there was like a brand new airport, and there were freeways and high-rise office buildings and a high-tech zone. And the place had just been completely transformed. And I thought that was just fascinating that that had happened in, you know, 24 years. It was like doing time travel.
Being able to see the same area of how it transpired just from the 80s to the early 2000s, just fascinating in itself. Where did you get the inspiration to write this book? Was it through those writing groups?
I've always liked writing, and I don't know why I didn't pick it as my profession. I've interested in lots of things, and I actually, in college, I had a double major in art and geography, and I ended up having a career as a cartographer making maps. But throughout that time, I was always one of those people who kept a journal, you know, a diary when I was young, and I wrote. And actually, what kind of started my writing career, I would write, you know how people send out these Christmas letters? I would write these kind of tongue-in-cheek Christmas letters that made fun of my family and what we had done in the past year. And I would send them to old friends, and one of these old friends was in a writing group and said, wow, if you write anything like your Christmas letters, you should join our writing group. So I did, and just thought, well, I'm going to take out all these notes that I wrote and see if I can turn it into something. So, yeah, that's kind of how it got started. And between when I started in the writing group and when I actually published the book, I did write a couple articles. I'm interested in a lot of things. My husband loved solar eclipses, and we had a little thing where we chased solar eclipses. We saw four of them together. And so I wrote a couple articles about that for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. In anticipation, I don't know if you remember, there was a solar eclipse in August of 2017. And I wrote an article in a bicycling magazine about my experiences biking in China. So I, you know, had a couple of other little things that I had gotten published. But yeah, I just decided I wanted to do this book, and it was a long time in the works. And what really pushed me to publish it was that in January of 2017, my husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which is almost always a terminal diagnosis. And he died in June of 2018, and I just realized if I wait forever, this book will never get published. I only have so much time, and so I really pushed to finish it and get it published. And it did get published. It took me a while. I had to kind of recover from losing him, but I got it published in September of 2022.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your husband, and I know this book will bring kind of a nice memory of him as well through his passion.
It's dedicated to his memory. This would not have happened. I would not have had this adventure except for having been, you know, with him. It's a tribute to him. You know, he opened up this world for me, and it kind of continues because now my two sons are grown. My older son has two children, and they are in elementary school, and they go to a Chinese immersion school. So my grandchildren, sort of in a direct line, are now fluent in Chinese, way more fluent than I am. I can kind of get around, find the bathroom, and order a meal, but they really can speak the language. So it's been sort of a family theme.
I know you've got a book signing coming up. Let's talk a little bit about that upcoming here the next week.
The book signing will be at Beaverdale Books. It'll be at 6:30 p.m. this coming Monday, March 20th, first day of spring, I think. And Beaverdale Books is located at 2629 Beaver Avenue in Des Moines. I'll be there starting at 6:30. I'll talk about the process of writing the book, what drew me to do it, and then I'll read a few excerpts, some of the stories in the book. And I'm sure I'll be, you know, taking some questions from people in the audience. You know, if you have any questions, I'll be there to sign and sell books. And, of course, you can browse around with all the other things that Beaverdale Books has to offer.
Well, appreciate you joining us here, Patty, on 97.7 The Bolt.
Well, thanks very much for having me. And I hope to see some of your listeners at the reading at Beaverdale Books on Monday evening.